Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. Our theme this week is Things Fall Apart, and we'll be featuring some classic routines by George Carlin. If my recording equipment doesn't fall apart first, I hope you'll stay tuned. Summer is ending, and at the House of Doust, things continue to fall apart. The 4-year-old mixing faucet in the kitchen is dripping up a storm whenever you run the water, and I can't figure out how to disassemble it to change the washer. If it even has a washer. Our ancient built-in dishwasher has just started leaking, too. The toilet doesn't leak, thank Neptune for small favors. But it doesn't flush all that well anymore, either. The on-off switch on Mary's 3-year-old laptop computer just failed. We've devised an inelegant workaround, a kludge, so the machine at least is functioning again. There's an old computer term. Does anybody still use it? A kludge. K-L-U-G-E. It means a clunky and low-class fix for a problem. Like a sash window that slides up and down, and the cords break, so you prop the window open with a book. It works, but it's a kludge. My own computer, a 10-year-old laptop, has an odd virus that I can't seem to kill, which stops me from checking my email. I've got a kludge for that too, a second 10-year-old computer. In the past 3 years, we've had to get a new roof for the house and a new hot water heater. So I suppose the septic tank will be the next to fail. Or else the furnace. I believe we have the only septic tank on our block. Possibly the only one in the neighborhood. Sure makes me feel special. But septic systems do fail eventually, and furnaces too. To say nothing about the national economy, the Bill of Rights, public education, corporate agribusiness, the banking system, and in general, globalized capitalism as we know it. Oh yes, that's failing too, and its demise is not going to be swift or pleasant. Yes, you can quote me on that. Did I mention the ecosystem? On the plus side, the silverware has held up beautifully for 40 years. Okay, it's stainless steel, not silver. But still, it's as good as ever. Unfortunately, Oneida does not make personal computers, dishwashers, driveways, automobiles, kitchen faucets, toilets, nuclear power plants, pension funds, U.S. foreign policy, or the human body. So the theme of our show today is things fall apart. In fact, it's a principle of physics, entropy. And we'll hear George Carlin's interesting take on the subject from the early 1990s. Now, 20 years later, George Carlin himself has fallen apart, and like John Brown's body, lies a moldering in his grave. It's a famous phrase, things fall apart. It's from W.B. Yeats's poem, The Second Coming, written about 1920. All sorts of famous phrases come from that short poem. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. How about this one? The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Same poem. Well, we should hear it. I read it aloud once on New World Notes back in early 2010, and I think I'll just replay that part, including a few introductory notes by me. It's all very short, less than 3 minutes, including the introductory mini-lecture. So here we go. A great take on this is William Butler Yeats's poem, The Second Coming, written around 1920. It describes the West heading towards yet another world war. That was prescient of him to see this as early as 1920. In the poem, Yeats has a premonition that the horrible Armageddon that heralds in a new third epoch could be at hand. A couple of quick footnotes first. He uses the term spiritus mundi. I think the concept is from Carl Jung. It means roughly the collective unconsciousness. In the first line, Yeats uses the term gyre, G-Y-R-E. This is a three-dimensional spiral, a corkscrew, shaped like an inverted cone. It gets wider and wider as it goes up. He's talking about a warbird, a bird of prey, a falcon, circling wider and wider and higher until he is literally, out of control. The falcon gets out of control of the falconer. And if you have a better metaphor for the reality of war, please send me an email. Later in the poem, there come references to the Sphinx, heralding the pre-Christian epoch, to the cradle of the baby Jesus, heralding the Christian epoch, and, oh my God, what is coming next, to herald the third epoch. Whatever it is, it's going to be a bumpy flight between airports. Here is Yeats's The Second Coming, which I will read from my marvelously preserved Norton Anthology of English Literature, which I purchased for freshman English class in 1968. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming! Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. Somewhere in the sands of the desert, a shape with a lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow thighs, while all about it reel shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again. But now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. And what rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born. That was The Second Coming by W.B. Yeats. Yeats is seeing the collapse as part of a cycle. The collapse of the old order is followed by the painful birth of a new order. In 1920, right after World War I, as we now call it, the old political order certainly did seem to be collapsing. But what is the new order that is being born? Maybe Yeats was thinking of the Russian Revolution. Whatever it is, Yeats is less than thrilled with it. He calls it a rough beast. Here's something that Yeats missed. Across Europe, the political system, monarchy, was indeed crumbling. But the economic system, capitalism, was still there and growing stronger by the day. Soviet communism did challenge capitalism. But things fall apart, and Soviet communism fell apart first. I think the transnational, globalized, corporate capitalist system, which we now serve, is falling apart too. It's enriching a very few people by impoverishing the vast majority. It has failed to feed too many millions of people. It is pushing the earth to the limits of ecology. Capitalism requires constant growth, and the resources of this planet are limited. Constant growth is unsustainable on a finite planet. Things are falling apart, and increasingly, the kings of the economy are using military might to make sure they keep their slice of the pie. In 1920, many Westerners looked at the Russian Revolution and thought, a new day is dawning. Well, that particular rough beast, slouching towards Bethlehem to be born, was stillborn. Or died young. In 2012, we see our own system collapsing, and we don't see any alternative system struggling to be born. Ouch! Today, Yeats seems like an optimist. Incidentally, my ultra-high-fidelity digital recording of me reading Yeats's poem wouldn't play. The digital file had gotten corrupted. So what you heard was a lower-fidelity copy. How's that for proving a point? Yeats writes a poem about how things fall apart, and my recording of that very poem fell apart. What do you say we take a break from my own voice? There have been some good popular songs on the theme, Things Fall Apart. One notable one was Bruce Springsteen's My Hometown. Remember that? Now Main Street's whitewashed women and vacant stores. Seems like there ain't nobody comes down here anymore. They're closing down the textile mills past the railroad track. Foreman said these jobs are going, son, and they ain't coming back to your hometown. Well, that's from memory, but pretty close, I think. But Bruce is focusing on things falling apart just economically. James McMurtry has a song in which that happens too, of course. But here, things are falling apart in several other ways, too. That sounds more like the world I live in. Let's have a listen. It's called Ruins of the Realm.
Standing on the banks of the river Shane, ain't got tuppence to my name. I stand my ground and I cast my net, dancing in the ruins where the sun don't set. Dancing in the ruins of the crown, infield rifles keeping us down. And a premium load in a shotgun shack on a two-lane road, smack in the middle of the Bible Belt, dancing in the ruins all by myself. We got the National Guard with the bayonets, we got the Ten Commandments on the State House steps. We shout not steal and we shout not kill, dancing in the ruins of our own free will. Dancing in the ruins of the South, Confederate flag taped over my mouth. Dancing in the ruins, cause we might as well. Dancing in the ruins of the realm, a fool and a madman at the helm. Dancing in the ruins of the Reich, down in the bunker on a hunger strike.
James McMurtry saying, when the system collapses, you might as well dance, since there's nothing else you can do. Let's hear it last from George Carlin. This is a live recording from the very early 1990s. Carlin starts small with a glass of water, possibly polluted, and his gaze gets wider and wider until he's talking about the ecosystem and then maybe the whole universe. In Carlin's view, civilization is collapsing. The human species, having made the Earth uninhabitable for itself, is heading towards extinction. Here Carlin adopts a positive tone. Don't worry, species die off all the time. What's one more? The Earth will survive. Indeed, without us, the Earth will probably be a better place. He makes us agree with him, on the one hand. On the other hand, we find maintaining this godlike perspective is pretty hard when you're a mere mortal and your world is crashing down about you. Carlin pretends here that he loves to watch disasters happening, including buildings falling down and people leaping to their deaths to escape fire. This was 10 years before 9/11, remember. One wonders what Carlin would have said to a post 9/11 audience. Probably he would have cut out some parts of the routine. Ironically, 9/11 pretty much confirmed what Carlin is saying here. So does our catastrophic man-made climate change. Carlin was not only a satirist, he was a prophet. And here he is.
I admit I'm a bit perverted, but it amuses me that no one can really trust the water anymore. And the thing I like about it the most is it means the system is beginning to collapse. And everything is slowly breaking down. I enjoy chaos and disorder. Not just because they help me professionally. They're also my hobby. You see, I'm an entropy fan. When I first heard of entropy in high school science, I was attracted to it immediately. When they told me that in nature, all systems are breaking down, I thought, what a good thing. What a good thing. Perhaps I can make some small contribution in this area myself. And of course, it's not just in nature. In this country, the whole social structure just beginning to collapse. You watch. Just beginning now to come apart at the edges and the seams. And the thing I like about that is that it means it makes the news on television more interesting, makes the television news more exciting, makes it more fun. I watch television news for one thing and one thing only, entertainment. That's all I want from the news, entertainment. You know my favorite thing on television? Bad news. Bad news and disasters and accidents and catastrophes. I want to see some explosions and fires. I want to see blowing up and bodies flying around. I'm not interested in the budget. I don't care about tax negotiations. I don't want to know what country the Pope is in. But you show me a hospital that's on fire and people on crutches are jumping off the roof and I'm a happy guy! I'm a happy guy! I'm a happy guy! I want to see a paint factory blowing up. I want to see an oil refinery explode. I want to see a tornado hit a church on Sunday. I want to see people, I want to know there's some guy running through the Kmart with an automatic weapon firing at the clerks. I want to see thousands of people in the street killing policemen. I want to hear about a nuclear meltdown. I want to know the stock market dropped 2,000 points in one day. I want to see people under pressure. Sirens, flames, smoke, bodies, graves being filled, parents weeping, exciting my kind of TV. I just want some entertainment. It's just the kind of guy I am. It's the kind of guy I am. You know what I love the most? When big chunks of concrete and fiery wood are falling out of the sky and people are running around trying to get out of the way. Exciting. That's why I watch auto racing. That's the only reason I watch auto racing. I'm waiting for some accidents, man. I want to see some cars on fire. I don't care about a bunch of redneck jack-offs driving 500 miles in a circle. 500 miles in a circle? Children can do that, for Christ's sakes. Doesn't impress me. I want to see some schmuck with his hair on fire running around punching his own head, trying to put it out. I want to see the pits explode. I want to see a car doing a 200-mile-an-hour cartwheel. Hey, where else besides auto racing am I going to see a 23-car collision and not be in the son of a... And if a car flies out of control, lands in the stands, and kills 50 spectators, fine, f*** them. Serves them right. They paid to get in. Let them take their chances with everybody else. Just means more fun for me. More fun for me. Hey, at least I admit it. Most people won't admit to those feelings. Most people see something like that on television, they'll say, oh, isn't that awful? Isn't that too bad? Lying. Lying. You love it and you know it. Explosions are fun. And hey, the closer the explosion is to your house, the more fun it is. Did you ever notice that? Sometimes you have the TV on and you're working around the house. Some guy comes on television and says, 6,000 people were killed in an explosion today. You say, where, where? He says, in Pakistan. You say, oh, f*** Pakistan. Too far away to be any fun. But if he says it happened in your hometown, you'll say, whoa, hot f***. Come on, Dave, let's go look at the bodies. Let's go look at the bodies. I love bad news. I love bad news. Hey, the more bad news there is, the faster this system collapses. Fine by me. Fine by me. Don't bother my Don't bother my son. I'm glad the water sucks. I'm glad it sucks. You know what I do about it? I drink it. Unless it really smells, if it really smells a lot like sulfur, then I might buy a soda. but it's got to be a soda loaded with chemical additives. I like a lot of chemical additives in the things I eat and drink. See, I'm not one of these people who's worried about everything. You got people like this around you. Country's full of them now. People walking around all day long, every minute of the day, worried about everything. Worried about the air, worried about the water, worried about the soil. Worried about insecticides, pesticides, food additives, carcinogens. Worried about radon gas, worried about asbestos. Worried about saving endangered species. Let me tell you about endangered species, all right? Saving endangered species is just one more arrogant attempt by humans to control nature. It's arrogant meddling. It's what got us in trouble in the first place. Doesn't anybody understand that? Interfering with nature. Way over 90% of all the species that have ever lived on this planet, ever lived, are gone. They're extinct. We didn't kill them all. They just disappeared. That's what nature does. They disappear these days at the rate of 25 a day. And I mean regardless of our behavior, irrespective of how we act on this planet, 25 species that were here today will be gone tomorrow. Let them go gracefully. Leave nature alone. Haven't we done enough? We're so self-important, so self-important. Everybody's gonna save something now. Save the trees, save the bees, save the whales, save those snails. And the greatest arrogance of all, save the planet. What? Are these people kidding me? Save the planet? We don't even know how to take care of ourselves yet. We haven't learned how to care for one another. We're gonna save the planet? I'm getting tired of that. I'm tired of Earth Day. I'm tired of these self-righteous environmentalists, these white bourgeois liberals who think the only thing wrong with this country is there aren't enough bicycle paths. People trying to make the world safe for their Volvos. Besides, environmentalists don't give a about the planet. They don't care about the planet. Not in the abstract, they don't. Not in the abstract, they don't. You know what they're interested in? A clean place to live. Their own habitat. They're worried that someday in the future they might be personally inconvenienced. Narrow, unenlightened self-interest doesn't impress me. Besides, there is nothing wrong with the planet. Nothing wrong with the planet. The planet is fine. The people are difference. Difference. The planet is fine. Compared to the people, the planet is doing great. Been here 4.5 billion years. Do you ever think about the arithmetic? Planet has been here 4.5 billion years. We've been here, what, 100,000? Maybe 200,000? And we've only been engaged in heavy industry for a little over 200 years. 200 years versus 4.5 billion. And we have the conceit to think that somehow we're a threat? That somehow we're gonna put in jeopardy this beautiful little blue-green ball that's just a-floating around the sun? The planet has been through a lot worse than us. Been through all kinds of things worse than us. Been through earthquakes, volcanoes, plate tectonics, continental drift, solar flares, sunspots, magnetic storms, the magnetic reversal of the poles, hundreds of thousands of years of bombardment by comets and asteroids and meteors, worldwide floods, tidal waves, worldwide fires, erosion, cosmic rays, recurring ice ages, and we think some plastic bags and some aluminum cans are going to make a difference? The planet isn't going anywhere. We are. We're going away. Pack your folks. We're going away. And we won't leave much of a trace either. Thank God for that. Maybe a little styrofoam. Maybe. Little styrofoam. Planet will be here and we'll be long gone. Just another failed mutation. Just another closed-end biological mistake. An evolutionary cul-de-sac. The planet will shake us off like a bad case of fleas. A surface nuisance. You want to know how the planet's doing? Ask those people at Pompeii who are frozen into position from volcanic ash. How the planet's doing? Want to know if the planet's all right? Ask those people in Mexico City or Armenia or 100 other places buried under thousands of tons of earthquake rubble if they feel like a threat to the planet this week. How about those people in Kilauea, Hawaii, who build their homes right next to an active volcano and then wonder why they have lava in the living room? The planet will be here for a long, long, long time after we're gone, and it will heal itself, it will cleanse itself, because that's what it does. It's a self-correcting system. The air and the water will recover, the earth will be renewed, and if it's true that plastic is not degradable, well, the planet will simply incorporate plastic into a new paradigm, the earth plus plastic. The earth doesn't share our prejudice towards plastic. Plastic came out of the earth. The earth probably sees plastic as just another one of its children. Could be the only reason the earth allowed us to be spawned from it in the first place. It wanted plastic for itself. Didn't know how to make it. Needed us. Could be the answer to our age-old philosophical question, why are we here?
Plastic.
So, the plastic is here, our job is done, we can be phased out now. And I think that's really started already, don't you? I mean, to be fair, the planet probably sees us as a mild threat, something to be dealt with, and I'm sure the planet will defend itself in the manner of a large organism, like a beehive or an ant colony can muster a defense. I'm sure the planet will think of something. What would you do if you were the planet trying to defend against this pesky, troublesome species? Let's see, what might, viruses. Viruses might be good. They seem vulnerable to viruses. And viruses are tricky, always mutating and forming new strains whenever a vaccine is developed. Perhaps this first virus could be one that compromises the immune system of these creatures. Perhaps a human immunodeficiency virus, making them vulnerable to all sorts of other diseases and infections that might come along. And maybe it could be spread sexually, making them a little reluctant to engage in the act of reproduction. Well, that's a poetic note. And it's a start. And I can dream, can't I? See, I don't worry about the little things. Bees, trees, whales, snails. I think we're part of a greater wisdom than we will ever understand. A higher order. Call it what you want. Know what I call it? The big electron. The big electron. Whoa. 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 It doesn't punish. It doesn't reward. It doesn't judge at all. It just is, and so are we, for a little while. Thanks for being here with me for a little while tonight. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening to New World Notes. You'll find an archive of all our shows at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. This is Kenneth Doust, advising Illegitimae non carborundum, things fall apart. Nonetheless, please tune in again next week. Ciao.